Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Everyone I've invited here has something extraordinary to offer the group. And if Lee invited you, I've no idea what you're doing here.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast. I'm David Chen, and I also use AI to figure out where to inject the drugs. Joining me today, her video essay work has been seen by millions of people. She's also a filmmaker and a previous co-host here on Decoding TV. Welcome back, Jesse Earle, to Decoding TV.
Yeah, and I am downloading an app from some rando on the internet and allowing it to access all of my cell phone information. So I'm very excited to be here.
As you do. We are so thrilled to have Jesse Earle back on. Had a great time covering Gen V with her. And also, we're planning to cover Invincible Season 2 on This Week in Streaming in the next few weeks as well. And of course, I do want to mention, you should check out her work at youtube.com/@JessieGender1. And I've enjoyed many of her videos and find them very entertaining and enlightening. But we are here today because we are going to talk about A Murder at the End of the World, Episodes 1 and 2, Episode 1, Homme Fatale, and Episode 2, The Silver Doe. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com and find us across all platforms, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok at Decoding TV. And of course, if you want to support this podcast, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. It really does to help this podcast keep going. Now, Jesse Earle, you know, I wanted to let people know a little bit behind the scenes. We had talked about covering the show. We talked about covering the... We'll tell them about the behind the scenes of the pronunciation later. Okay.
I was wondering right, where you were right. going. You're throwing me under the bus so quickly.
I'm going to have to throw Jesse under the bus, okay? Because basically the title of the first episode of Murder at the End of the World is Homme Fatale, which is a very clever sort of version of femme fatale. It's a very common concept, femme fatale, defined as an attractive and seductive woman, especially one who is likely to cause distress or disaster to a man who becomes involved with her. That is the online dictionary definition. So Homme Fatale is the male version of that. And when we were starting to record this podcast, I said, hey, Jesse, you know, what are the names of the first two episodes? And she said, I don't know, the first, it looks like it's Latin, Homme Fatale. I was just like, what is happening?
Look, I am not.
I was like, I don't remember it being Latin. Like that's when I.
Look, I know I'm a very smart person, but I cannot pronounce words for crap. I am the most American person ever to exist. So it's totally on me. I will accept that. At least it's not as bad.
It was the elephant in the room. We had to get that out into the world.
Okay. Exactly.
To give people a little bit of sense of the behind the scenes, I knew this was kind of going to be a big show this fall, especially because the talent behind it, Britt Marling, Zal Batmanglij, they're the people responsible for the OA, which had a huge fan base when it aired on Netflix. And so this was going to be like potentially a big show that debuted in the fall. And Jesse and I debated multiple ways of covering this show. Like, should we do week to week? Should we do like batches of episodes? Or should we do what we're ultimately going to do, what we settled on doing, which is cover it as This Week in Streaming. We're going to do the first couple episodes and then do another episode when the finale airs in, I think, 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Why are we doing it this way? It's because Jesse and I both watched the first two episodes and we decided there's not quite enough going on an episode by episode basis to feel like this justifies the week by week podcast treatment, right? Yeah. I don't think the show is bad or anything, but like, I think that, you know, we're the type of show that like dives into like extreme detail on like plot developments. And, it just didn't feel like there was that much, to chew on necessarily in terms of week by week for the podcast format specifically.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot to talk about. And so that's why we wanted to bring it to you in some format. So it's going to be this week in streaming, but just wanted to let people know what to expect. We're going to cover the first two episodes and then we're going to cover the finale after it airs.
Now we say this and watch episode 3 will be some of the most radical out there. So many twists and turns episodes we've ever seen of TV, because that'll be our luck.
I mean, if that happens, you know, we will make it, except we maybe, I might call Jesse up and say, hey, we got to cover this. But so far we've only seen the first two episodes. So like, we don't know what happens, and there's only 7 episodes. So it's not like there's like 13 episodes and, you know, like if you're unsatisfied with the coverage on Decoding TV, just wait like 3 weeks and then it's going to be over. So, okay. All that said, we're going to start by talking about our overall thoughts on the first two episodes and then dive into a detailed recap of what happened. So let's get into it. Jesse Earle, let's start by talking about our overall thoughts on the first two episodes of A Murder at the End of the World. Did you enjoy these two episodes?
I did enjoy these first two episodes. I think it's sort of scratching that like post-Glass Onion Knives Out itch of like the Agatha Christie sort of modern-day murder mystery. It very much feels like, without spoiling too much, very much in the vein of like Glass Onion in terms of structure. Which I, you know, it's not anything radical, but I definitely really enjoy it. It's a structure that has stuck around for a long time because it is fun. And this seems to be bringing in enough, like sort of its own individual ideas and themes to make it worthwhile. The thing that I'm ultimately going to be very curious to see, without spoiling too much, as the series goes forward, to see how it evolves a lot of these ideas, because even to a degree, just considering, you know, the time period when this was made versus where we are now, again, trying to stay spoiler free here, it feels a little bit dated in a strange way. And so I'm curious to see how much it's going to evolve those ideas over the course of the rest of the season, or if it is just going to be weirdly seem like an unfortunate casualty of just recent events in our industry specifically.
Yeah, I hear you. Ironically, I just came home from seeing a film in a theater, an upcoming film that I'll be talking about at some point on my newsletter, decodingeverything.com, or on the Filmcast. And there were references to, first of all, Twitter, which doesn't exist anymore.
The
Twitter is exploding about the blah, blah. And it's like, okay, that doesn't. And then somebody said, oh, and we're going to be able, like, we might be able to get you on Tucker Carlson's show, which also doesn't really, I mean, it does exist on X now, but there's, he's no longer on Fox. And anyway, so I thought that was a very, I will not reveal the film, but this is the danger of making specific cultural references, is things change so quickly that like by the time it happens, you know, it might not be relevant.
Even those without that specific movie, and even this like topic that this is kind of going into too, like they feel like they should have been like more future proofed than you would have thought. Whereas like now, just like it feels like the things that this brings up, I'm like, oh yeah, it feels weird that these characters are shocked by this when it's like a lot of us have been talking about this for the past few months.
It's just clear
that this was shot like a year and change ago before it was really
exactly
top of mind.
So. I hear you. Okay, my thoughts on the first two episodes of A Murder at the End of the World. Overall, I think it's very solid. Like, it feels like a solid murder mystery. I like that it is only 7 episodes. I think it's a miniseries. I don't think they're going to do a season 2 of this.
Yeah, they
announced
it was a limited series, yeah.
Yeah, so it makes me feel like we're going to get some closure at the end of this. Spoiler alert, there is a murder that takes place, and I think like by the end of the show, it will be solved, is my guess. And that feels like it's going to be hopefully pretty satisfying. There's like a lot of little mysteries that make me feel like, oh, I wonder what's going on there. The talent is great. There's some really great actors here, including Clive Owen. I was a huge fan of Emma Corrin from their work on The Crown. And now they're here playing basically the protagonists of this show. And I think they're doing a great job as well. I believe Emma Corrin is non-binary, by the way, although the character that they play is not in the show. As far though, as I can
though
tell.
There is some interesting gender presentation with the character in the show that I found to be intriguing to see if they explore that in any way, considering especially they cast Emma. So.
Yeah. So all that stuff is great. There's a lot to like here, I think. And if you're into kind of murder mysteries, I think that there's a lot to enjoy. A couple things I don't like as much. First of all, as I already alluded to earlier in the podcast, the pacing feels really slow. Like each of the first two episodes was over an hour long, which is just like, okay, like if you, you know, please, like the show insists upon itself. When you're watching a series that every episode is more than an hour long, it's like, okay, you better be Mike Flanagan making Midnight Mass for me to feel like this is worth the time. And I don't know that the show quite clears that bar. It does feel very slowly paced, and some of the dialogue is quite stilted. I think that one of the things that I think is in general a good feeling is when the show is ahead of the audience, right? Like you as the audience, you're trying to catch up, like, oh, what's going on with the show? Like what's the show trying to communicate? You know, now sometimes that can go too far, like in the case of Westworld.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's like, oh, like the show is keeping you guessing, and that's an interesting, the audience is struggling to keep up. Very often in this show, it feels like the show is behind the audience. Like, you know, I'll give an example. Like early on in the episode, in the first episode, somebody, one of the characters makes mention of like this legendary hacker, you know, oh, so-and-so was a legendary hacker. And I was like, okay, well, they're obviously going to play a significant role in the show. But it's just the dialogue is so stilted that it makes me feel like, okay. I see what you're doing, show. And
just saying, I see the Chekhov's gun you're about to shoot off. Yeah.
It's like, do you see this gun?
It's right here on my mantle. It doesn't look
right
very
here.
Pretty.
Check it out. And it does it many times, you know, like it's not just like the one instance. Like I feel like that's happening with some frequency. So that's a little bit, you know, a mark against the show, but overall certainly worth us discussing and covering. And there's enough interesting stuff to make it worth diving into. So, those are our overall thoughts on A Murder at the End of the World.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Let's get to some thoughts on what actually goes on. Let's talk about like the actual plot. We're going to spoil the first two episodes. Episode 1, Homme Fatale, and Episode 2, The Silver Dome.
I mean, you mean a homie fatale?
Yeah. Let's get into it. In the present day, Darby Hart, who's played by Emma Corrin, reads an excerpt from her best-selling true crime novel, The Silver Doe, in a bookstore. In flashback, Darby and her friend, her boyfriend, Bill Farah, who's played by Harris Dickinson, whom she met as part of an online crime-solving forum, argue over and eventually decide to sneak into the home of a potential serial killer of several Jane Does. Eventually, Darby uses the hack she learned from following her hacker idol Lee Anderson to get inside the home, where they discover a dead body beneath the basement stairs. However, they are soon held at gunpoint, presumably by the killer, but they seem to escape? Question mark. Bill, however, leaves Darby in the night, leaving a note saying, "I think this is both too much and not enough." In the present, Darby reveals she and Bill have not spoken in the 6 years since. So that's kind of how the show opens. A couple of assorted observations here, Jesse Earl. Mm-hmm. First of all, wow, was this a really inconsiderately run book event?
Yeah, right? They all just sort of like got up and walked away as she was talking.
Yeah, well, it didn't feel like... Darby found it particularly important to show up either.
Yeah, like gets it right as she's about to as she's about to go on stage.
pretty lackadaisical on both sides of the equation is what I would say. But I think right off the bat, it kind of sets me on edge a little bit, because I don't know, is this building character in some way, or is it just like they're doing this because it looks cool? Like, having a character just stroll into their own book event right at the last minute. It's like, oh, look at what a bad ass.
They don't care about the world.
They don't care about the rules, man. You know, like, and so I'm like, is that what I'm supposed to take away? Because that's a pretty clunky way to make that point.
Yeah, and it's also clunky on the other way too, because we learn later on from some characters that her book got like a lot of critical acclaim, but this scene kind of sets it up that no one really cares about her book, because people just get up and start walking away, and then they're like drawn in by how powerful her story is, which is an interesting way to do that. It's like, oh, she's like, her story is very interesting, but it like runs against what the show later tells us, which is like, she's a well-known best-selling author, which seems like people wouldn't be getting up and walking away at that point.
I know, so it's kind of like... Now, look, Jesse, there's a possibility. I actually think there's a possibility that we're going to find out this was all some dream sequence.
Yeah, there's some
or
some messing
some
with
other
us here.
Shit is going on. Like, that's very possible. In which case, oh, that's going to explain everything that we just saw. But, like, assuming that's not the case, it's weird. And I think the flashback is also weird, too. And I think it's meant to be weird, because that's the other thing that makes me feel like this is all some kind of dream, because... obviously, they uncover this person. The bones are perfectly laid out. And then the person appears upstairs. And then they start saying the names of the dead people. It's very theatrical. And then, you know, cut to the present, and everything seems to be... everyone's breathing comfortably.
Yep.
These are the people that made a show where they stopped the school shooting with the power of dance, is my understanding. So, like...
I do love the OA quite a bit. So, yeah, I'm like, there is a chance for it to be very trippy.
Right. I don't know if we're meant to take this at face value and I, David Chen, just find it weird, or if you're supposed to think it's weird. Do you know what I mean? Like, if like the audience is supposed to think it's weird. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
what do you think of this sequence, Jesse?
I think so too, here's my theory, if I'm allowed to play with it. It's kind of foretelling what we're going to talk about in a little bit, so I won't go too far into it, but there's this element of like the ChatGPT writing the story and then being missing, and so like missing elements of things and not being as good at telling stories. So perhaps that's also playing into how this story is being told. Which might be a sort of interesting tie in to the theme. So I think that there are, basically, long and short of it is, there are themes set up within the show that I think could lay the groundwork for something like that. But it could also just be that it is just weird setups too. It's hard because right. I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt on it though, because they are people who have made something like the OA, which is a wild show just in and of itself. So, you know, there is trust enough that they are willing to play with you and your expectations.
So, Jesse, what happens after the opening sequence?
Yes, after the reading, Darby returns home, where she receives a message from billionaire tech philanthropist Andy Ronson, played by Clive Owen, to download a mysterious app. Once installed and given permission to her phone, the app is revealed to be an alternate intelligence, as Andy likes to call it, named Ray, played by Odardo, apologies, I'm probably mispronounced his name, so apologies on me. Odardo Ballerini, who invites Darby to a mysterious retreat. Darby, enticed by the fact that Andy is married to Lee Anderson, played by Britt Marling, accepts, and Darling arrives at a high-tech hotel in Iceland owned by Andy, who reveals that the retreat is to bring together a group to come up with ideas to address the looming climate crisis, including a famous filmmaker, a robotics engineer, a doctor turned moon explorer, a Chinese smart city designer, and Bill, Darby's former boyfriend, who seems to have an unspecified history with Lee Anderson.
All right. Well, now we get to some of the core plot elements of the show. And I think you're right that there are parts of this that feel weirdly dated because, as you indicated, Jesse, we have been talking about ChatGPT and AI for, I think, the last year or so, right?
Yep.
And so when it's like, oh, there's an AI and it can speak like a human, I think a lot of us are like, well, what else have you got? You know, like, it doesn't feel like a super revolutionary concept, given that we've seen it play out in reality, like in practice in our lives. You know what I mean?
I will say the way that they do it is pretty interesting. I haven't really seen it done this way before, where the AI, Ray, is sort of appearing on her phone as part of like augmented reality and seems to be like an actual person that you view through the phone. So I thought that that was kind of a cool visual way to do it that I haven't seen before. But the actual concept and ideas that it's playing with are sort of like, yeah, I've seen this before. What are you going to do with it? Sort of thing. And the show at this point hasn't really done much with it, other than I will say I do like Ray. I think the performance is really, really solid, both in voice and in his few physical scenes that he gets.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the thing is, I think that a lot of the technology feels really well done, like feels really true to life. The idea that Darby would need to download an app onto their phone and
give it all this access,
you know, give the access. But like, okay, so that actually feels like, oh, that's how that would actually happen in real life. Like, I've worked at companies that use like, you know, test flight and beta apps and stuff like that to like communicate with people. But there's just like weird moments. So I'll give an example. Like, Darby speaks with her friends about fearing giving this billionaire control of their phone, and then later on, like, but then, you know, they kind of shrug off the things like, oh, well, whatever. Like, it's just my phone. It's not like, you got everything backed up, right? It's all in the cloud, right? But then, like, later on, she says, you know, you can't take away my phone. It's half my brain is on there. And that was just a weird thing to say, given that just, you know, 10 minutes ago, somebody was like, oh, if he nukes your phone, who cares? And she seemed to, like, agree with that. That was a weird, anyway, it's just like little things like that that I'm just kind of like, huh, I wonder if I'm supposed to feel like that's weird. Anyway.
Yeah. I will say I do really like the setup here with Clive Owen. Again, very Glass Onion-like to a degree.
Right, right. In particular, the second Glass Onion film, where an eccentric billionaire brings like all these people from different walks of life to their home in the middle of nowhere where a murder occurs and then needs to solve it. Now, in this case, she's not actually a detective. She is
she's like a true crime author and a hacker.
She's a true crime author, but also has forensic experience because her father worked in that field as well. So anyway, which is an interesting kind of angle on it. It's like not you see detectives do it very often, but it's rare to see true crime authors that also have like forensic experience and you know, experience with anatomy and things of that nature.
And I also say something too that kind of bringing up in the weirdness of it all too, it's implied, and this kind of goes to the Glass Onion thing as well, where it's implied that she was not, Darby was not invited to the this place by Andy. It was actually invited by Lee Anderson. It's not stated directly, but it's sort of implied that Andy said, and like, I don't know why you're here if you were invited by my wife, but you know, I'm glad to have you here regardless. So there's like an implication that she wasn't invited by Andy.
Well, the setup is that there's 9 people that have been invited. Lee Anderson, the Clive Owen character. Andy Ronson, the Clive Owen character, has invited 5 of them. And his wife, Lee Anderson, played by Britt Marling, she's invited 4 of them. And I think it's going to be a long-running season mystery as to who invited
who. Who is invited who, yeah.
I think it's clearly a red herring that, like, my guess is that it's pretty clear that Andy Ronson did actually invite Darby, right? Mm-hmm. Because that would be the surprising thing.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, she does seem quite outmatched in many ways by a lot of the people mm-hmm. that are in the thing, that are invited, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Including Joan Chen, by the way, who shows up in this show, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Joan Chen
is great. Yeah.
62 years old, by the way. Looks amazing.
I look worse than her today, and I'm only in my 30s. So, like, yeah, I can only dream.
So, yeah, I think it's actually comical, like, how this person went to the moon, and this person designed smart cities, and Darby wrote a book. but I think at the end of the day, it's like, maybe Andy Ronson invited Darby because he knew that someone would die, or, you know, something is going to happen.
Yeah, the weird setup twist that'll probably come in. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they're off to Iceland, which looks incredible. Have you been to Iceland, Jesse? Already?
I have not, but every time I weirdly love cold places, which is why I'm living in California right now and I hate it. but yeah, I love Iceland. It always looks gorgeous in film.
I have been to Iceland. It has a very special place in my heart. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to on the planet. Possibly the most beautiful place.
Wow. Damn.
And I don't know if they actually shot. Like,
they
those,
did. I actually looked up. They shot there and also in New Jersey for a lot of the flashback stuff that we saw.
I was going to say the two most common, like the two places that you could match with each other, Iceland
and
New Jersey.
They look, yeah.
They're completely indistinguishable from each other. One of them is a barren wasteland.
And the other is Iceland.
And the other is Iceland. One of them is a barren wasteland where someone can get murdered and there's no help whatsoever. You know, anyway.
Yeah.
The other... So I thought all the Iceland stuff looked amazing, and it does capture kind of what's special about it, which is you really feel like you're at the end of the world. Like, there's no one there for miles around. Interestingly, by the way, what's amazing about Iceland is no matter where you are, there is amazing cell phone coverage on Iceland. So
really?
You're in the middle of nowhere. It has some of the best cell phone coverage I've ever seen. Like, you're in the middle of nowhere. You can see 3 miles in every direction and there's zero people, and you have full bars, basically. That was my experience.
All right. Well, good to know that I can't. I get better cell phone coverage there than New Jersey. So I guess it is better to kill someone in Jersey than Iceland.
Absolutely. Darby meets all the people. She sees Britt Marling cleaning up some mess in her room, Lee Anderson's character. And it's like Lee Anderson that she really wants to meet. And then apparently Darby's ex-boyfriend, Bill, is like kind of the Banksy of this universe, right? Like,
yeah.
Which it was, I'll be honest, was a shock to me based off of the version of him that we got in the flashback, right? Like, this is not a guy that felt like he had a lot going on in his life based
on. He did
off
feel
of
like
glimpses.
A down on his luck, sort of like, I'm just hanging out doing nothing sort of dude, not like I'm hanging out with billionaires all the time.
Well, I mean, charitably, I would say that, you know, after he broke up with her, that's when his career really took off, right? Is when his experience with her was so inspiring that it created, like, caused him to create this art piece called Artificial Insanity, which he references later. So yep.
I will also say too, something to do with him and as well as Darby's character that I find interesting is the presentation between past and present, because Darby, you know, we're talking about gender presentation, and just something I noticed is that Darby in the past is very much dressed very femininely, like wearing dresses, her hair is much longer, even in the sections that we'll see some stuff later on where she's younger than even before she met Bill. But even when she's with Bill, she seems to be dressed that way. But then in the present, she has a lot of tattoos that even seem to echo a lot of Bill's tattoos, and she has a much more androgynous look to her that I found. I'm just sort of curious what the show is doing there, because you know, the OA was well known, especially in the trans community back in the day, for being one of the few shows. I mean, it exploded a little bit more now, but at the time, it was one of the few shows that did have sort of trans representation in it. And so I'm curious to see how the writers of this show might be playing with that idea as well, because they've been known to do it before at a time when it wasn't sort of as as forefront of people's minds as it is today.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. I did think it was a wonderful moment when Darby sees Bill sit down and then she starts choking on the food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was shocked as well. That was not who I expected to see show up. And it is very convenient from a plot perspective that her ex-boyfriend just also happens to be one of the most brilliant people on the planet. But, you know, we'll grant that to the show.
There's also an element, too, that it could be intentional as well, that that's part of the messing around. Because she wrote about Bill in her book. So theoretically, you know, the Andy and Lee characters would know that they would know each other. It's not sort of like completely incidental.
Right. I mean, there's kind of stuff like that where, remember, they're in the pool later on. Mm-hmm. And one of the people says, yeah, when I heard, you know, I didn't want to come to this thing. But when I heard that Fangs, I think his name, right? Like, that's his artist name is Fangs. When I heard Fangs was going to be here, I had to come. And my reaction was, how did you hear that Fangs was going to be here? Like, no one knew. That was one of the whole things. Was like, no one knew who anyone else was before they showed. Anyway, so I'm like, is that supposed to be a clue that you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just kind of, I'm wondering what is a clue that something is amiss versus that's just like clumsy storytelling. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I have that in mind the whole time. Am I overreacting? Probably yes. Feel free to let me know at decodingtv.
No, I mean, I've been trying to keep it down because we're going to get to a scene later on that I think I'll bring up some of my thoughts on these elements of the show. I kind of alluded to it earlier, but I'll wait until we get a little bit further into discussion. But I do have thoughts on why that might be the case, but it's just a theory. So,
yeah. So what happens next? Bill and Darby go out for a walk, where Bill reveals he left her because she scared him. And because he felt Darby had left Bill over and over again in metaphorical ways. Darby declines Bill's invitation to get warm in his hotel room. Which, by the way, I think he also says, I have something I need to share with you, right? Maybe he has some critical information. But she changes her mind after listening to a song on her iPod classic. and she goes to visit him, but hears grunts and crashes, causing her to go to his window outside just to see him fall to the ground covered in blood. Darby rushes to get Sean, played by Alice Braga, to help him, but Bill dies before she can do anything. This was, to me, like, pretty clearly he was murdered.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It was, but then, like, in the next episode, they try to pass it off as though he OD'd, but it was like, the dude is covered in blood. Like, it's not,
it's not so,
that was like, weird.
Yeah, it's like he could have fallen and hit something, but it's just, it's staged very strangely for that. I did really like the moment, though, where she has to, like, run outside in the high-tech building and, like, go and find this, like, weird window. It was that element of it was kind of cool and fit the strangeness of the location. But, yeah, it was staged very strangely if they meant to kind of play it as, like, it could go either way sort of thing.
That is how a lot of hotels in Iceland are structured, is like everyone kind of has their own little like lookout and then, you know, and it looks out over this amazing vista. But, you know, the only way you can access it is by awkwardly going around. If you can't access from the inside, you have to awkwardly like go around to the outside. Mm-hmm. And you usually don't even, sometimes you can't even reach it, you know, because there's other stuff in between. So
I
did like the verisimilitude there when it came to the hotel structure. But I guess that's it. In terms of episode one, right? Anything else about episode one we want to talk about, or shall we move on?
No, I think right? that was pretty much the just basic setup. You get at a weird place, murder happens. So,
Jesse, tell us about some stuff that happens in episode two of this show entitled The Silver Dope.
The next morning, Andy tells his guests that Bill's death was due to an overdose, which Darby contests, given Bill had gotten sober during their time together. And also, Andy pushes his guests to stay despite the events. Darby, distraught, sneaks into Bill's hotel room to investigate his corpse and finds evidence of injections in uncommon places on his body and no fingerprints on the needle, leading Darby to believe that Bill was murdered. Bill also sees Lee sneak into Bill's room to investigate, and later she quietly enlists Lee's help during a presentation from the filmmaker about how he wrote his latest film with the AI Ray's help, shocking the guests who apparently have not heard of ChatGPT.
Right. This is, you know, he's like, I made this movie with the help of artificial intelligence, not knowing that we've been hearing nonstop about these issues for the last 6 months because of the writer's strike and everything like that.
Which is also interesting, too, by the way. I did look up sort of some background information on the episode, and apparently this show was supposed to come out in August, but was delayed specifically due to the writer's strike. And I have to wonder, because there's no way they, like, shot more stuff in, like, the week since the SAG strike ended. So I'm very curious if they delayed it specifically because it was dealing with some of these issues.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. You know, because we were... I was considering covering it on Decoding TV because it was supposed to come out in August, as you said, right?
Yep, so, yep.
And yeah, it probably would have been a bad look for the show to come out during that time.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, Jesse, it probably would have looked really terrible if it came out.
It's great. Yeah. It's all look at what I did with my film. Yeah. And it's this goes to my my theory because this show is sort of like the characters in this scene are extolling the virtues of like, look how cool it is to work with Ray. And isn't it like we could write with like they write with Harry Potter and Ernest in the voice of Ernest Hemingway. And by the way, I even went to ChatGPT and asked it the same prompt that the character gives in the episode about like write a Harry Potter chapter in the voice of Ernest Hemingway. And it came up with something very similar. So like this exists right now. And the show plays it as very weird. So that's sort of the dated part of it. But it does go to my idea of like, if there is these sort of like weird inconsistencies in the story that you and I have been pointing out, and I'm curious if the surprise is that this whole show is supposedly being written by Ray. Like, I don't think the show itself is actually written by AI. I don't think they did that. But I think like maybe one of the twists within the universe of the show is that the story we are watching is supposedly being told by AI. And that's why there's these weird inconsistencies because the story doesn't completely make sense because a human, quote unquote, didn't write it. So.
Yeah. Wow.
That would be the sort of trippy thing that I think these writers would do considering I know their work on the OA.
Right. That's why Darby storms into her book events extremely late at the beginning is because that is totally a decision that ChatGPT would make.
It's like or, right at the last minute.
Or it could be mediocre human writing. We don't know.
Yeah, we'll hopefully find out. If at the end of the season turns out like there was no twist like that, then I think we both just say, yeah, I guess they just were not.
I guess it's just a little, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just a little bit clunky. That's all, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So what else happens? In flashback, we see Darby from a young age working alongside her forensic pathologist father to help investigate dead bodies. Darby quickly becomes enraptured with a Jane Doe found alongside strange earrings, the silver Doe from future Darby's book, which prompts her to begin sleuthing on the internet, leading her to encounter Bill. The two bond over their investigation until Darby discovers a major clue that would cause Bill to have to meet her in real life, scaring Darby. Bill romantically hacks into local lamps to send a Morse code message to Darby, wishing her a happy birthday, prompting her nervously but happily to meet him for the first time at a local bar. Back in the present,
Darby
uses her skills and clues from Lee to hack into the camera outside Bill's room, where she finds video of a person with a mask outside of his room before he died. So that's what else constitutes the rest of the episode. And I think I gotta say, I thought that the other stuff, the flashbacks to Darby as a kid and the flashbacks to Darby as a kid, notwithstanding the unprofessional behavior of her father bringing his child to work, and the stuff with her and Bill, it all kind of worked for me. It felt like a very plausible way that a relationship like that would develop. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, and I actually think it was some of the strongest stuff in the episode that I think really sold it well. I actually really like the relationship between Darby and her father, and he is very unprofessional in bringing to work, and also like it's a little, we see her as like a little kid with near a dead body, which is her father seems very cold. Like, yeah, it's fine. She's good, and I do really like how he just seems to view her as like an extension of himself. Like, you know, it teaches her how to read dead bodies and do all the forensics and doesn't really see her beyond like having a personality beyond that.
Speak in the present day and they talk about dead bodies like, you know, you talk about the weather with your parents, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I really liked that. I thought it was very, very well written. That was one of the stronger aspects for me.
I thought the modern day stuff was a little bit mannered. Like it was very like, look how edgy they are talking about a dead body. Like you've never seen a father daughter talk like this before. it's kind of how I felt like mm-hmm. the screenwriters were thinking when they wrote those scenes. But all the flashback stuff worked really well for me. And the idea of like meeting someone on the internet, like bonding over true crime, like mm-hmm. that strikes me as very, very plausible. So
yeah.
Yeah, I liked all that stuff. So.
I do. And I also really like Darby and Bill's performances off of each other. They, cause I wrote in the sort of, synopsis here, like he romantically sort of does the Morse code thing, which could very much have come off, and it somewhat does to a degree come off creepily, but I think their performances really sell that romanticism of it, mm-hmm. which I really did like. Yeah.
So any other thought, you know, before we get to our concluding thoughts on the episode, Jesse, I think we're pretty much at the end here. Why don't we just take a pause? Jesse Earle, you want to let people know where they can find more of your work on the internet this week?
Yeah, you can find me at Jesse Gender over on YouTube, where I do video essay type of stuff. I just recently released a video about the video game Starfield, but more sort of wondering about the sort of the meaning of science fiction and how we write science fiction. So please check out that video. I'm also going to have some other video essays coming up soon. I also have a secondary channel called Jesse Gender After Dark, where I do news, reviews, reactions. I'm reviewing the Invincible episode by episode over there as well. And then we'll be doing a full recap here on this podcast too. And then I also am on Nebula, which is the streaming service that hosts a bunch of myself and a bunch of other wonderful creators. And they are also funding my sci-fi film that'll be coming out early next year called Identities, starring the wonderful John DeLancey of Star Trek fame and Abigail Thorne of Philosophy Tube, amongst many others. So you can check that out when it comes out.
Jesse is very busy, and we're very grateful to have her talents here on Decoding TV. So, and of course, you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. And if you want to support this podcast, you know, I pay everyone who I work with, video editors, co-hosts, everyone gets paid. And it's only because of people who are paid subscribers at decodingtv.com that I can do that. So if you want to support the show, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. It's greatly appreciated. All right, Jesse, let's wrap things up here. I guess, do you have any predictions about what's going to happen here? Like, the biggest question to me is obviously who killed Bill.
Yeah, Bill, yeah.
I mean, if Bill was actually murdered, which I think he was, because the title of the show is A Murder at the End of the World. but also, like, who killed Bill? What of what we have seen is true or fake? Like, was the scene where they encounter the serial killer a dream, or was it real? Mm. You know, is there anything of what we've seen that isn't real? You know, like,
or is it just something she made up for her story too? Like, cause she's reading right? from the book at that point. So it could just be yeah. something made up. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't even think about that though, but that's yeah. great. That's a great interpretation.
Yeah.
Any predictions as to who might have killed? But I think it's still too early to know.
That was going to be one of my major criticisms that I was going to put up here at the end, is that by episode two, we only have, what, five more episodes? And there's still time, I think, to do this. But I don't have a firm enough grasp on the other potential suspects, other than perhaps Andy and Lee. They get a decent amount of characterization. But everyone else, we get little snips of them, but I don't know enough about their motivations and who they are to really have a guess at this point. So I'm hopeful that the next few episodes sort of flesh them out in order to give me some of those little hints and clues. Because as of right now, it's kind of hard to make any real guess. I do have, like, I think thematically there's some interesting ideas set up here, like I said, with the AI stuff and the, like, telling of stories. And even the title, The End of the World, which sort of seems to imply, like, maybe there's some time chicanery going on here as well. So, you know, there's enough themes that set up some interesting ideas, but I'm sort of curious what that's going to mean in the actual plot. And there's not enough yet to really hook myself into that.
Yeah, I think that all strikes me as right. There's just as I mentioned, you know, when I'm watching the show, there's just all these little weird decisions. Here's another weird decision. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's this really, I have to say, overall, I think the direction on the show is pretty good, like pretty yeah. solid overall. A lot of the moments are really impactful. The show looks great overall. I think, like, there's a lot of strong direction. And one of those scenes is this scene when they're both in Bill's room. Both Lee and Darby are in Bill's room, and, like, Darby is trying to evade detection.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she's about to be discovered when all of a sudden Lee hears a noise and is reminded, oh, yeah, I got to be somewhere. But then literally the scene afterwards, Darby reveals that she was in the room with Lee at the same time. So it's like, Well, what was the point of her
hiding? Like, why couldn't they have had the conversation?
Had the conversation
in the room. Yeah.
Right. I'm just left scratching my head. What are some of these decisions? Again, maybe there's like obvious answers that I'm just not identifying.
I think the immediate answer that I could give is I think they wanted to add a scene with like tension, in the sense of not even the scene where she's there, where it's like they're talking while like Andy's in the room and he seems to get annoyed at one point with them. So I think like shooting it that way, like gives there a little bit more like tension to the scene. But it doesn't make sense in terms of like the larger scope of the episode, where it's like you could have just had them have the conversation in that room and then go forward. So yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a well done scene of tension, you know, like that's true. Like what was the point of that? You know, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's just like moments like that where I'm like, what's going on here? What is it? You know, anyway, otherwise, I do think the show tackles a lot of things that are really relevant in our society. AI, billionaires who think they can solve the world's problems.
Yep. Yep.
Another huge issue that we face. And I'm curious where it's going to come out on all that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots to figure out about where the show lands on those things. So anyway,
Show has me intrigued, but it really depends on how they land it. It hasn't hooked me up, but I'm intrigued by a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. All right, Jesse, any thoughts or any other thoughts? Should we wrap it up there?
No, that all sounds great to me. I'm looking forward to talking about this when it all wraps up.
All right, yeah. We'll be back in a few weeks with our conclusion of what we thought about the murder at the end of the world. And in the meantime, I anticipate Jesse will make at least one or two more stops here on Decoding TV before we get to that point. So stay tuned for that. Jesse Earle, thank you so much for chatting with us here on Decoding TV.
Thank you for having me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.